dwelling in the darkest depths of the mind. It's time for Mark DiValenti and Brain Burrow.
Hello, everyone. This is Mark DiValenti, and this is another episode of Brain Burrow. This is one of our digging deep sessions where we have a chance to talk with our guest. Our guest has a chance to talk about what motivates him. What does he fear? What does he value? What does he want for himself? And then you as a listener and viewer have a chance to say, how does this apply to me? I'm very pleased to say that on the show today, I have Mr. Chase Dudley, and I'm going to give him the opportunity to answer the big open-ended question. Who exactly is Chase Dudley?
Well, that's a really good question because I can honestly say out of all the podcasts I've been on, I've never really been asked that question. And it really definitely creates some brain cells to think about that. I guess ideally me, I'm just a big kid at heart who love making movies. I love movies since I was a kid. As a kid, I was more of a socially awkward, kept to myself and just watched tons of movies while everybody else is outside playing and, you know, and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. I was just watching Jurassic Park and wondering how they did what they did that inspired me. I've never lost that ambition to always wanted to film. I begged my parents into giving me a camcorder, and they got me one at 15 years old, and I've never put it down. It was a fun journey. And things really took off when I met my wife, you know, 13 years ago. She was like, you know, you need to get this into a business and really start thinking. Because of course my mind is all over the place. I'm like always everywhere. And she's more of the grounded person, like, okay, stop right there. And she's jotting down my ideals, and I'm a kind of person, I'll say it once and then I'm like on to the next, and then I have to backtrack and I'm like, what did I say? All right, hang on. Wow. But I hope that answers you. I'm a big reptile enthusiast too. So
reptile enthusiast. Okay. No, again, there's no right or wrong answer. It's what comes from the heart. And Chase, it's clear you feel passionate about this. Go ahead.
Oh yeah. No, when I was outside, that's all I did. I like lived in creeks and catching snakes and lizards and frogs and whatever had legs or not legs. Or I was the weird guy that I was very different from everybody else and nobody understood it but me. But hey. Yeah.
No, I think that says a lot, right? Both with filmmaking and your interest in reptiles, you have this sort of innate curiosity about you.
Yes.
So where does that come from?
I don't know. Because I mean, you know, we just put on this planet and we're told, hey, you're going to school. Okay, why? Then, you know, you're going to get a job. Okay, why? And it's just like, I'm always like, why? You know, like, because no one truly knows. It's just like you just put here and then you're told that you got to do all of these things, but nobody tells you why. And it's just like, that would be a good movie in itself, wouldn't it? Why? Because it's just, I'm just a very curious minded person. Like, even growing up, when you find out the hard way what you can and what you cannot say to your parents. Like, they don't give you a list. You're cursed. You can't say that. Why? Give me a list. You know, I don't
know. No, I think that you strike me as somebody who likes to challenge the status quo a bit.
Yeah, very much so. And it's not even on purpose. I just, a lot of times something would be said and then like, I have such an inquisitive mind, I would quickly counteract. And that got me in a lot of good areas and a lot of bad areas at the same time. Because sometimes when you ask questions to the wrong person, you know, that's...
Yeah.
Well, I got in trouble a lot in school.
So I think that's actually a really good point, right? I mean, talking to you, it seems like you just have a lot of confidence and you're embracing who you are and asking questions. And there's a lot of positives that come from it. But you mentioned about getting in trouble before. And could you talk about a time, whether it's school or whatever, whenever that inquisitive mind, please?
It was mostly like science and history where they'll play Jupiter is about 30,000 degrees Celsius. You ever been to Jupiter? Because you never really seem to get the weather right on this planet before we talk about other ones. But go to the office. I'm going to be grounded. Oh God.
So it's almost like they had a seat there
yeah,
for you.
It just seems like the older you get, the more the world seems to not encourage creative mind. Like as kids, all kids are super creative, and it just seems like somewhere from childhood to an adult, we seem to lose that. I don't know how or why that is, but if you add, like, I got 2 10-year-olds, they'd be 11, and I'm about ready to have a baby on the way in January. But if you are around a lot of kids, I love kids because kids ask some of the best questions that no one ever answers. And it's like, but then if you listen, then you'll listen, like, you hear other people, quit asking so many questions. But, like, I mean, how else can you know? You know?
Well, yeah, I think that's a really great point, right? And as kids, you know, whether it's, like you said, in school, there's almost these tracks you go on. If you don't get the certain grades, then you're in trouble, or you're looked at as just not being a productive citizen. And it's just interesting. And
well, much so. But, like, and that's the crazy thing, because, you know, Albert Einstein always said that if you judge a fish by the ability on how it climbed the tree, then the fish will grow up thinking he's stupid. Yeah. But everybody has a different way of their learning. You know, my son and daughter, they are total opposites on how they learn. My daughter is more like me when it comes to learning. She has to do it. My son can just visualize it, and he does it. He's, you know, very inquisitive, and he's kind of following my footsteps in a sense of questions. It's kind of like watching me grow up all over again. And it's like really hard to punish your kid for something you're not truly mad at him for.
Right. No, I think that's actually, it's a really good point. It's clear that you're imparting your values onto your kids in the same way that you were able to freely explore that growing up.
Well, yeah, because I think a lot of times parents tend to have these certain expectations for their kids on how they want them to be and who they want them to be. But in all reality, that's a whole life form. So I don't force any ideology that I believe or anything like that on my kids, because they are their whole, they are their own identity. So I think that would be very selfish on my part to try to force my beliefs on someone else. And a lot of times we grow up in a society where a lot of times we can't just simply say, hey, I agree to disagree with you, but still be friends or buddies or anything like that. Me and my best friend, Kenny, we talk all the time, and we disagree almost a lot. Almost a lot, if it makes sense. We disagree a lot, and he, but we always ended with, well, we disagree, and we move on. I just wish the world was more like that, because sometimes when you disagree with someone, I think it's really sometimes good to know why you disagree or why does something bother you. Because, you know, I also like to read like Buddhist quotes, and they say whatever triggers you is what you need to what you need healing with. And I think that's a very wise point.
Yeah, that is. And it's interesting, right? Because oftentimes we do protest too much, right? Whenever there's something that definitely triggers us.
It's always a cost, but sometimes it's really good to really know why you feel at core, why you feel the way you feel. A lot of times nothing really truly offends me, but like I do have some really nice, passionate, strong disagreements. And I would argue that point, but as long as it's civil, but once the name calling or cussing start coming, I'm like, okay, I'm done. You know,
that says a lot of
in school too. So,
well, that says a lot about your emotional intelligence, right? Of being able to know yourself and your feelings and what your triggers are. So, and again, you said everybody has a certain trigger. So what are some triggers that activate you?
I think for me, it's like automatically, because a lot of times when you meet somebody new, right? And then like, what do? And then I realized for the longest that when a person asks what you do for a living or in life, they're evaluating they're going to respect you for what you say, you know? And it's like, if you're like, oh, I'm an entrepreneur. Oh, okay. That's nice. Why don't you get a real job? You see those things like that, like meeting somebody and automatically judging them to a certain level of because like every job, in my opinion, to a degree, is like the glue to America. Like a lot of people, if you go into a fast food and you just sit and see how most people talk to fast food workers and then see the utter disrespect that they're making your sandwich, like somebody has to do it, right?
Yeah.
So is it so humiliating to treat them so low?
So that's a really great perspective on that. So really it's about labeling people and.
Yeah, labels, because I mean, some people like I met and like, you know, again, if I was narrow-minded, I would just be like, oh, he's just a Walmart associate, but this person might have a side business that he's working on. And then he might be doing this, this, and this, and this. Sure. A lot of people have a lot of talents that they have, but they don't like this course discuss with other people. You never truly know, because my wife, I know, I mean, I've been with her for 13 years. And in the first 4 or 5 years, she had nothing to do with filmmaking. But like, and then when I asked her, because she was always a very organized person. And then she, I was like, you think you can like make some call sheets or something? Because I was like everywhere. I used to do this all by myself. But this woman is so great. And then like, I even get compliments from like people like Robert Mukes and very high people that we worked with so far. And they're like, these are some of the most organized call sheets. But she, when it comes to like organization and like work skills, she is very fantastic. She had no film skills. I had no idea that she was this talented. Although like, you know, but she had no real desire in film before then, you know? And it's just crazy. You never know what somebody's capable of until you put them up to that task.
Well, yeah. I mean, that again says a lot, right? It's looking beneath the surface. It's looking beneath the label. Cause listen, I mean, labeling people's easy. It's sort of like an initial sort of, it's how our ancestors survived, right? We sort of look and say, okay, that's right. But here there's a lot of work that goes into it. And it's clear that you've done very well by looking beneath the surface and understanding the individual.
Yeah, yeah, because I mean, it's like an actor, Paul Cecil. I worked with him numerous times. I never knew he had a degree in graphic design. And now here he is making some really realistic like ID cards and stuff like that and credit cards and stuff like that for my movie. And like labels, you know, to basically replace from getting copyright infringements. So when you talk to people, like that's my favorite thing about filmmaking is that it is such a team working sport and everybody brings something to the table. And when I first started filmmaking, I never knew what a true director was. I thought it was like, okay, this is my vision, but it's really, I mean, it is to a degree, but more of a director, you're more delegating and utilizing everyone. And you really need to listen. If you really want perfect, like, you know, like, it's no such thing as a perfect film, but if you really want a great film, when you cast your actors, you really want to listen to what your actors say about their characters that they're playing and who they feel that they are. Everybody needs to have a little something in the film that really makes it feel like it's they're part of it. If a lot of people, you know, are in something, but they don't feel a part of it, they're not going to feel as attached. And a lot of times, you know, when I talk to my actors, they're like, man, I wish that more directors talk to. And I didn't realize how, you know, because I feel like, in my opinion, a director and an actor's relationship should be close to a marriage. I really feel like, you know, I mean, because it's both people trusting people. They trust me that I know what the hell I'm, or I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. They trust that I know what, yeah, they trust that I know what I'm doing. And I trust that they know what they're doing.
Sure.
And what really, that's what a relationship is. It's about two people supposed to be trusting.
Yeah, that's really, that's a great perspective. And yes, you're allowed to swear. I just means I put a, you know, explicit E on this whole interview. Oh, okay. So trust me, I've had people swear a lot more than that and say a lot more things. So it's okay.
I'm not fond of cursing. I mean, like if I'm mad, now I'll turn to a whole different person.
Well, hopefully you don't get angry during this interview. So no, that works out. It seems like it takes a lot, like you said, to get you mad. It actually says a lot.
Usually the same repetitive thing that somebody does over and over again that I told somebody the first, second, maybe third time that I didn't like before, you get a different reaction.
That's right. No, that's fair. I think that, yeah. I mean, again, I think it takes a lot to get you upset. Now, I will say you brought up a really good point about you're talking about really activating intrinsic motivation in the people you're working with on film. And that's important to you because it really, to your point, gets people to get their own creativity going and then they contribute to the overall project.
I feel like a director or any like CEO or boss or anything like that, that should be their main ingredient because everybody's there needs motivation. Like if you are not excited about what you're doing, how can you possibly expect anyone else to be excited with you?
Yeah.
If you are just like, all right, guys, we're going to go out here and shoot. Like if somebody, like if I was on the set and somebody did that, I'm like, really? Like, we're not going to like huddle in and then like hug it out. All right, break. You know, like football, you see football, like when they come out and the one team who has the most celebration and excitement is usually the team that wins.
Right. No, you're right.
Contagious. It is contagious.
Well, and you know, when you explain that, it seems almost like, of course, but I got to tell you, in working in healthcare for almost 30 years now, there's very few leaders that actually say that as eloquently as you just did. So I want to commend you for your ability to see that.
Oh yeah. No, when I go into healthcare and you know, like I'm a person who like feeds off of vibes. If the vibe is off, I get very uncomfortable. Like it's, you know, that's why I don't do around good around quiet people. Cause I'm like, what are you thinking? What are you plotting? Why are you quiet? I mean, too short to have all this stored up. But I mean, you know, some people don't, I do know some people don't really have a lot, like they don't know how to express themselves, or I do know there are certain reasons why people are quiet, but I think that I've been pretty good at getting quiet people to like open up and talk about certain things. And then like, you know, I actually became really good friends with this person who was very introverted and he was always quiet, but he was always like, I always thought nobody was interested in what I had to say. But then like now he talks a lot now. And I'm like, that's really good though. But I think a lot of times people, when they ask questions, I feel like there's like pop card questions. Like, hey, Mary, we work, right. You know, it's just like certain questions, but no one really, like Heath Ledger was like, people ask you, get married, what's your income, but no one really truly ever asks, are you happy?
Yeah. That's a great perspective. And it sounds like you help people feel comfortable and kind of break down some of those barriers that a lot of times people have in when they communicate with others.
Yeah. My wife was some, you know, she grew up in foster care. My wife was super quiet when we first got together. But like now she's a social, you know, butterfly. You know, I think sometimes it takes trust and sometimes, you know, people have been doing some way more traumatizing experiences than I have. And I always try to understand what makes a person them.
I mean, and that's clear. And it's been great for you in your personal relationships. It's been great for you on the set and in your other creative endeavors. I'm interested though, Chase.
Not always, usually.
Not always, okay. Well, talk about that then. So has there been a time whenever your approach hasn't worked out so well?
Yes, on a set of Payday. And it's funny because I feel like I can talk about this now because now we're pretty good. Me and Laura didn't have an agreement eye to eye on the character of Addie in Payday. And, you know, I guess I thought I came off better, but I guess she took it completely the opposite of how I meant it. And she had this big, you know, of course, meltdown. And she's like, I want to go home. I'm done. I'm not ready. And then, of course, you know, the next day we had a big old like conversation and I had to learn more, you know, like how, I guess, for another artist, like an actor, like actors are very like sensitive, you know, in a sense. And it's not bad. It's actually good because they have to carry all these emotions that we're asking of them. And we expect them just to deliver it on cue. But the atmosphere, the motivation and all of that is really enhanced on the director's set, on the vibe. And that made me step up more on how my vibe and how that controls on set. Because Payday was a very stressful shoot. We shot this movie in 10 days and it was all supposed to take place on one night in one location. And then like the circumstances with the film, like raining, somebody even paint the building. So we had to do a lot of camera tricks. It was just like everything that could have went wrong with that movie did. But when we wrapped the film, and of course, you know, we talked, you know, me and Laura really had a heart-to-heart conversation, and I understood more prospectively. But I commend her for really, like, you know, putting it together and really stepping it up. And like, it could have went really wrong, but we got through it. We found a common medium, and even some of the choices with the character that she took that I wasn't really so sure that was going to work, I felt did. And that's where I learned on that you really have to trust the person you cast it to take on the role. Because when you go in there and you're like, I don't think it's this, this, and this, and then they start to second guess, well, am I even right for this part because you chose me? That was the biggest lesson learned in that project.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, again, it's incredible you're able to do that in 10 days with all the moving parts and have the situation where there was a disconnect in the communication and being able to grow from that.
Yeah, very much so. And I never talked about it before, but I wanted to get that off my chest on how Laura, you know, she taught that to me. And, you know, she was amazing in that movie. Like, the whole entire cast, Bishop Stevens was fantastic. Tiffany Fess was, wow, she was great. And that's funny because she was very excited to do, to play, you know, a hostage negotiator. Because a lot of films that she was doing at the time was horror. And then, like, she was like, I really wanted to do something like this.
Wow.
So it was really neat casting her and having her play like such a different thing that she was used to playing.
Yeah. And again, it goes back to what you said. You're trusting the individual to bring their best self to the project. And again, it doesn't happen by accident. You have to be the one, you as the director and the leader are the one who's creating that fertile ground for them to grow. So I think that says a lot about you.
Yeah. And Tiffany Fess, she's very witty, very, very intelligent actress. And she, like, you would tell her something, she's like, because this morning, right here in the script, it says the beat right there. Like, I was like, you don't miss nothing. I know what it says in the script, but like.
Well, and I think for you, you know, again, people in positions of power, and let's face it, as a director, you're in a position of power, right? People are looking to you to lead them. You also seem to have a really solid sense of humility about you as well.
You have to be, because I mean, I'm just a person with a passion, just like everyone else. And a director is just a position. An actor is a position, but it doesn't mean that my job is greater than yours. I mean, it's just a different, I guess it's perspective based. And I don't look at myself in the realm of, I'm Mr. Dudley to you.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I've never been like that. I don't like being called sir. Don't call me Mr. Chase. I still, when I cast Tory Beckham, which is like one of my favorite guys that I've ever been on set, he's such a funny guy. He always played in comedic roles, but he never really been booked for a serious role. Both the roles that I cast him for, he played, I wanted to challenge him. I gave him the opposite of what he was used to playing. But still to this day, he calls me Mr. Dudley. I'm like,
oh, wow. Dude.
It's just Chase. And it's funny because he's older than I am, but he looks younger. He got the good genes. It was like my cat. My cat just like almost knocked over my fan. That's a weird man. I'm telling you, that's a really weird.
Yes, they are.
It is the most randomest thing, and then they just like to do that.
Right. Right.
Like, he just ran into the fan. He probably went up there. Yeah.
Right. Well, they definitely enhance our lives, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, but my dogs, like, they do something, they're guilty.
Of course. Right, right. No, you're right. So I think, but your perspective, right? So I think there's two extremes, right? There's the people that you're talking about that do prefer to be called Mr. Dudley or Mr. Valenti or all this stuff. And they sort of like have this air about them, right? Which causes people to not be creative because they're afraid to do anything, or they're like, this guy's a real jerk. But on the other extreme, you have people that are like, I don't know, what do you want to do? You know, kind of like flown with the wind, right? So, but you had seemed to have a really great balance of not being that, I'm going to, you know, you do this, but also you're guiding, you're a guide, you're an influencer is what you are. You're an influencer.
I feel like that's what a director truly is. And I feel like sometimes when somebody gets way too spoiled, or like, I've seen in Samuel Jackson's clause in his contract for him when he's an actor, he can stop the production and go play golf anytime. I mean, that is like insane. Could you imagine shooting something very passionate? He's like, hang on, mother. I'm gonna go golf. What? Right. Dude, we're making a movie. What are you doing playing golf? But as Samuel Jackson, I ain't gonna argue with him. I mean, especially if he gets on me like Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, right. No, exactly. But it's interesting though, the way that different people carry themselves and what even, I mean, I've always been
Kenya Reeves.
Yeah.
Kenya Reeves. Like, I mean, there's been multiple videos of him where you're like, wow, that's Kenya Reeves, where he's just riding the subway and he's sitting, and then he gets up and let the lady sit, and he's just sitting there. And it's like, this guy is like super mellow. And then he gave like 70% of his salary to the Matrix, stunt coordination, you know, team and stuff like that. And I'm like, this is insane. Like,
right.
He's someone I would want to be around.
Right. It's his giving back. His actions really exude humility for sure. Yeah. So Chase, we're actually almost at 30 minutes. So I really want to get your perspective. Oftentimes, right. Well, listen, it was a good conversation. It doesn't mean you can't come back. You know, I've never had a guest come back yet because we're just sort of through this whole first season. This will be episode 45, I think. The reason I say that is because I'd like to ask different questions of guests. And my question for you, because you seem to be somebody who really enjoys activating others, who recognizes individuals, for anybody who's listening or viewing this right now, what advice do you have to people out there? And it's whatever you want to talk about, but what advice could you give people out there on how they, on anything?
Well, don't listen to other people's expectations or what they think you should do. I was always told that I would never amount to anything. I would never do anything. You know, my movies suck. My movies would never go anywhere. Never believe them because people's opinions don't speak for, you know, me. You are solely responsible for the outcome. Dwayne The Rock Johnson always says, be the hardest working person in the room. And if you listen to like a lot of successful people's stories and things that they've done, you know, get up early, be the first person, you know, be the first and last person to leave, because opportunity is everywhere. What somebody won't do, there's going to be somebody who will do. I'm a big firm believer of that.
Well said. Yeah. Thank you very much for that powerful message. It's really about, you know, like you said, don't let other people define you and really make those opportunities for yourself and go out there and grab them. So that's interesting. Thank you, Chase, for sharing that.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I want to thank you, of course, for being on the show today and sharing your perspective.
I want to say thank you for having me. And dealing with my technical difficulties.
No, it's fine. It's all right. It's my pleasure. We're able to, you know, do it and have this conversation. And like I said, I really love the way you apply the idea of focusing on the individual and really helping to pull up the strengths and skill sets of those individuals. And it seems to have been very successful for you.
Man at the Mirror, man. Everybody should listen to it. It's a very powerful song.
Well said. No, thank you. Okay, so I also want to thank the listeners and viewers out there who tuned in today. And on behalf of Chase Studley, this is Mark D. Valenti for Brain Burrow. Have a great rest of your day.
You just dug deep with Mark D. Do you want more? Follow Mark on Instagram at @ValentiHorror and subscribe to the Brain Burrow podcast.